fall. One of them had already stopped screaming. He couldn't tell which, but he didn't suppose it mattered. He leaned over and gave Dietrich a kiss, then he cocked his arm back and hurled the flaming bottle of tequila at the leaking propane tank with every bit of strength he could muster. The glass bottle shattered against the steel tank, splashing burning alcohol all over it. The tank exploded. The shockwave knocked Frost and Dietrich flat. The last thing Frost remembered as he went flying backward through the air was watching a gigantic fireball erupt from the tank and light up the night sky. Frost woke up in a hospital bed the next day, in some distant building he'd never seen, where things were clean and white. Dietrich lay in the bed next to him, still unconscious. It seemed she'd put herself between Frost and the explosion and taken the brunt of it. The nurses weren't sure if she'd make it. "You never know," one of them said to Frost. "She's a fighter." Later, the captain came by to ask Frost what had happened, and he told her everything. A pair of representatives from Weyland-Yutani stopped by too, and Frost repeated his account for them. None of them seemed to believe a word of it. The captain took particularly detailed notes as she grilled Frost without relenting. When they were finally done, the captain said to him, "You've had a horrible experience. You and Dietrich almost died in that explosion. It's not surprising your brain would create impossible memories like this to explain what happened." "Fuck you." The captain gave him a sympathetic nod. "I'll ask the doctor to prescribe you a sedative." Later, once everyone had left Frost alone with his thoughts, he actually began to wonder about his sanity. Maybe Birdo had given them some bad tequila. Maybe the concussion he'd sustained had scrambled his brain. Maybe he actually had hallucinated the whole thing. He just couldn't tell anymore. Yet it had seemed so real. Soon after, Frost forced himself out of bed and hobbled over to sit next to Dietrich and hold her hand. He didn't know if it meant anything to her while she was out cold like that, but it comforted him. For the moment, that was enough. Frost was almost falling asleep himself when Dietrich finally opened her eyes. She could barely breathe still, just enough to squeeze a few words out of her scorched lungs.
"We get 'em?"
Dietrich croaked. She sounded like a 3-packs-a-day smoker. "What?" Frost startled at the abrupt sound. "Who?" Dietrich stared back at Frost through watery eyes.
"The bugs. We kill all those fuckers?"
"As many as we could," Frost said. "Enough, anyway."
Dietrich gave him a wide smile, and before she closed her eyes again, she said,
"Next time we run up against something like that, I'm bringing a fucking flamethrower."
No Good Deed by Ray Garton. For my friends Scott Connors and Aaron Kemper.
"This moon is not a nice place to visit," Jack said, looking at his screen while his thin fingers moved like tarantula legs over the touchpad. "Savage winds, severe electrical storms, and yet people live here."
"Live and work," Mad said as the Viper touched down with a jolt. "In this case, they're the same thing. Terraforming is a life commitment."
"Research and mining, too. One of Weyland-Yutani's busy shake-and-bake colonies. The terraforming is advanced enough for the air to be breathable, but we'll want to suit up fully for protection against the weather."
The Viper powered down and Mad removed her seat straps.
LV-426, one of the 3 moons of Kalpamos, and Weyland-Yutani is working on all of them, also known as Acheron, the mythological River of Pain.
I thought it was the Stream of Woe.
Would you like to argue about it?
She chuckled and said, "Fuck off, Jex. No communication from the colony, so I'm assuming they're busy with other things."
"Of course, you didn't initiate communication."
"No, but I would have responded.
The point is, they haven't noticed us or don't care, which means they also haven't noticed the two escaped psychopaths who just got here. You still got a lock on Jaeger? He and his companion have left the shuttle behind and are approaching Hadley's Hope. We've got to beat them there. Any chance of that? Given our position, we'll have to move fast. Then let's move. Her seat slid back, then swiveled with a whirring sound, and Mad launched out of it. I saw their mugshots, but haven't had a chance to look at their history since we left the Tartarus. Access their criminal records and fill me in while we suit up. He got out of his seat as he accessed the proper file in his internal database, while following Mad to the rear of the ship to dress. We don't have enough time for everything, but I can hit a few highlights. Enzo Jaeger, the alpha male in this pack of two, once held an entire childcare center full of children hostage to distract law enforcement while accomplices went on crime sprees throughout the city. The operation was meticulously planned, perfectly synchronized, extremely risky, and yet they pulled it off without incident. Don't tell me. He didn't leave witnesses. You'd think. But he had the children locked in a room shortly after he took everyone hostage, so they weren't exposed to anything. Once his pals had enough time to get their jobs done, Jaeger killed all of the adults. He has a sentimental streak. Who'd have thunk it? Then he launched himself from the roof in a military-issue jetpack to meet with his compatriots and share the loot. Any survivors of that? Only Jaeger, and the loot. He used most of his newfound wealth to set up a criminal empire. Illegal weapons, drugs, pornography, black market sex slavery, professional assassins, a shopping center of crime. Is it true that he hung one of his wives by her ankles, eviscerated her, and she bled to death with her intestines dangling in her face? It is. That must have been some argument, huh? And the other guy? Jack Bates. He began his criminal career by killing his mother and eating part of her at the age of 14. Things only got worse from there. He's not too bright. Jaeger used him as muscle in the escape. He's a large person and apparently does anything Jaeger tells him to do, including killing 23 people in the process of escaping the Tartarus. Prison sweethearts. A tale as old as time. How does one man kill 23 people? What weapon was he using? He was unarmed. That's impressive, and hard to believe. By not too bright, do you mean he's mentally impaired? That's unclear. After killing his mother, he was put into a juvenile detention center, where apparently he didn't fare well. Bates claims that while there, he was forced to participate in some research programs conducted by Metcon Pharmaceuticals. Mad pulled up a zipper with a quiet hiss as she frowned at Jax. They experimented on him? Drug research, they told him. They claimed they were testing a new drug to enhance performance and extend longevity. Something they were calling Haxon K. Enhance what kind of performance? He didn't say. Nobody believes him, I suppose. Metcon denies it, of course, and the authorities are more likely to believe a pharmaceutical company than a convicted mother-eater. The detention facility denies everything as well. But it's not the first time someone has made such a claim, and there is evidence of back-channel collusion between Metcon, other corporations as well, and various prison systems, but not enough evidence to interest authorities. And there never will be. Of course not. We know better than that. To answer your question, yes, nobody believes Bates. He claims he's never been the same, that it made him dumb and a lot meaner. Meaner than killing and eating his mother? Mean enough to kill 23 people in 18 minutes. Do you think he's telling the truth? Unlike the authorities, I am less inclined to believe any corporation, particularly a pharmaceutical company, than I am to believe just about anybody else, including a convicted mother-eater. We know that kind of thing goes on, Jex. And somebody like Bates would be a prime target precisely because nobody would believe him. Are we planning to take Yeager and Bates back alive? Under normal circumstances, sure. Because under normal circumstances, the bounty's usually higher when they're alive. But circumstances are not normal. These two will not hesitate to obliterate anybody who gets in their way, and they will not go without a fight. They're heavily armed, and we can't let that happen here. Too many colonists. A high risk of civilian casualties. They said dead or alive, and I hope they meant it, because those guys are either going back to the Tartarus in bags, or I'll just take a finger from each of their bodies. Besides, the bounty is the same either way. They really want these guys. The universe will thank you. Their mothers will thank you. Well, Yeager's mother would. She's still alive. Completely disowned him. Good for her. Once they were suited up, they went to the weapons rack and began to fill their holsters and pockets. Mad took a Smith & Wesson 357 Magnum, a 40-caliber Glock, and a sawed-off shotgun that fit nicely into the long pocket at her right hip. She also took a set of electric brass knuckles that delivered a powerful electric charge with each punch, and a knife. As an afterthought, she strapped a couple of packs of punch-packing flash grenades, just in case. Turning to Jex, she said, "While we're out there, don't hesitate to kill either of them if you get a chance. Right away, as soon as we reach them. In other words, shoot on sight." "Yep." "Brevity has never been one of your strengths." She chuckled and said, "Fuck off, Jex." Mad had been in the right place at the right time. She had gone to the Tartarus to visit an old friend who was incarcerated there. Jewel Vargas was on the minimum security level because her crimes were nonviolent and she had made a deal. She was a digital thief who had stolen a lot of money from some bad people who immediately wanted it back. When they came after her, she cut a deal with authorities that would shorten her sentence and make the time more palatable in exchange for all the information she had on the criminals from whom she had stolen the money, which gave authorities the evidence they needed to arrest them and shut them down. A few minutes into their visit, alarms sounded and red lights began to flash everywhere. A rumbling explosion on another level jolted the ship. Then another. Madison Voss used aliases whenever she went someplace where her name might be recognized. But her real name was necessary for the ID check required to board the Tartarus and see her friend Jewel. As a bounty hunter, she had developed a bit of a reputation for bringing in a couple of high-profile fugitives, and she was well known to members of law enforcement and the penal system. It took only minutes for a guard to track her to visiting room B3 and lead her to the administration deck, where Warden Jeffrey Wallingford explained the situation. He was not tall, but he was broad, with skin so black he looked like a muscular, uniformed slice of nighttime. Two men had escaped the Tartarus in a stolen shuttle, and they had set explosives in every dock that launched the ship's armed cruisers, timed to go off as they were making their exit. Two officers of the Tartarus pursued in other shuttles, but they had a clumsy start. The shuttles were not armed or equipped to track and retrieve fugitives, and they lost the escapees.
"It may have been presumptuous," Warden Wallingford said, "but we took the liberty of sending their complete files to your ship's computer. I am hoping you're available to take up pursuit, because these men should not be loose, as you'll see when you read their files."
"I am available," Mad said. $25 million with half up front.
"Ms. Voss, you know that is an outrageous..."
"Mad," she said with a smile. "I like to be called Mad. And this isn't negotiable. $25 million with half up front, or I go back and finish my visit with my friend." When he stared blankly at her, she added, Time is a factor in these cases, you know. After a moment, he nodded once. Now they were about to plunge themselves into the brutal climate of Acheron, all before dinner. Jex was accustomed to emergency runs by now, and the routine was second nature to him. He had been with her for 4 years, and she credited him with keeping her sane on the job. A friend with benefits of Mads had a high-level position at Hyperdyne and allowed her to commission a custom-made synthetic. She was given access to technological advances that would not be available to the public until the following year's models were released. It had cost a fortune, but she had saved up for it and knew exactly what she wanted. A male synthetic with a sense of humor, one who could make her laugh. A smartass. Bounty hunting was not pleasant work, but it paid well and it kept her busy. Too busy to have to interact with other people and socialize, skills that had always eluded her. She hated small talk and found most people petty and small-minded. Mad had been told, more than once, that she had a depressive personality, and she supposed it was true, which was probably why she was so bad at getting along with other people. They all seemed so goddamned happy for no good reason, or worse, for stupid reasons. But she refused to take antidepressants or drugs of any kind if she could avoid them. What she needed was a friend, so she had one made. Jex was her only friend. She never lost sight of the fact that he was a synthetic made to her specifications, but it did not matter. She had developed real affection for him, because he made her laugh, and because he would shut up whenever she asked. He kept her from going crazy. "Let's go make some money, Jex."
"Let's do that. Oh, and I get to shoot on sight. That's very exciting. I think I wet myself a little."
Mad chuckled and said, "Fuck off, Jex." The high wail of Bates screaming in terror, bordering on hysteria, stabbed into Enzo Jaeger's ears inside the protective helmet he wore. For a moment, it overwhelmed the constant sound of rain pouring on his helmet and even the ripping thunder. Jaeger looked at his companion. He was able to see him clearly only because his helmet's transparent faceplate was coated with a water repellent that kept his vision clear.
"Jack, what the fuck?" he said.
After a pause, Bates said,
"Sorry, Enzo. I got my foot stuck between two rocks. Got scared for a second." "Did you get your foot loose?"
"Yes, Jack. Hey, Jack."
Another pause, and when he spoke again, fear had returned to his voice, quietly this time.
"There's not gonna be any Metcon here, is there?" "Any Metcon? It's a pharmaceutical corporation, Jack, and it's not here, no. This is Weyland-Yutani, remember?"
"Oh, yeah, Weyland-Yutani. You told me, Weyland-Yutani."
He pointed at the structure ahead with the big Weyland-Yutani logo emblazoned on the wall, its yellow and blue faded by the elements.
"Weyland-Yutani." "Damn it, Jack, I told you, remember? This is a Weyland-Yutani shake-and-bake colony, and I got a friend works here. Remember? Don't go having one of your goddamned panic attacks now, you hear me?"
Yeah, Enzo, yeah. I forgot you told me. Sorry. It's just, you know, it scared me for a second there, that, you know, we might run into some Metcon."
His fear suddenly gone, Bates's voice became a whimper. The poor, stupid son of a bitch. He was Jaeger's only friend on the Tartarus, a mountain of a man with astonishing strength, which was, he assumed, the reason the other prisoners steered clear of him and seemed to fear him. Jaeger had befriended him shortly after being incarcerated on the prison ship, because he was the biggest guy there, and everybody seemed afraid to get near him. He was a big badass. That was Jaeger's only interest in him.
He did not expect to like him or even want to like him. He had assumed at first that Bates's odd behavior and apparent thick-headedness were the result of long-term drug use. But as he spent more time with Bates, time that was, for the most part, blissfully free of interaction with any of the other inmates, which was the way Yeager liked it, he came to see that the big guy was about as dumb as a bag of hair, that was all. He had never used drugs. In spite of his size and intimidating appearance, he had close-cropped, bright red hair, vaguely simian features on his heavily freckled face, with tiny ears, deep-set eyes, and permanent tooth extensions forming small tusks that curled upward from between his big, lumpy lips, mediocre dental work at best. He was as meek as a kitten, with a childlike personality. A damaged child with foggy memories of bad things he knew he had done, but could not recall in any detail, but vivid memories of the bad things that had been done to him. And there had been a host of those in a childhood that had been a steady stream of abuse from a cruel and hateful mother. At first, Yeager had dismissed Bates's stories about being a guinea pig for Metcon. Bates cowered in terror whenever he saw the Metcon logo on a magazine screen or video ad. Yeager had assumed that the poor, pathetic guy had concocted those stories to fill the foggy spaces in his broken memory, and at some point had convinced himself they were true. But he heard whispers from others. They avoided him when he was with Bates, which was most of the time, but they could not be together every second, and sometimes he heard whispers. In the cafeteria, they said that Bates's meek-as-a-kitten personality changed drastically and abruptly when he was threatened or afraid. He became violent, dangerous. Some said his personality was not all that changed, that sometimes his physical appearance was altered, his size and even the color of his skin. That sudden change in behavior had landed him in solitary more than once, and the injured and dead he left behind ensured that he never would leave the Tartarus. Yeager saw the change for himself only once, when a piece of fresh meat on the Tartarus had decided to pick a fight with the biggest guy there with a few smart-ass remarks. The wrong remarks. It had happened so quickly, and there had been so much screaming and blood and chaos that the whole thing had remained blurry in Yeager's mind. Ever since then, he had never been quite certain of what he had seen, but he could no longer dismiss all of Bates's stories about his troubled youth and his nightmarish experience with Metcon. He learned that the others stayed away from Bates not only because they were afraid of his size and strength. They were afraid of accidentally offending him, unintentionally pissing him off. Bates was so god-awful dumb that he often misunderstood things he was told or misinterpreted the behavior of others. He always assumed the worst and took offense easily. After witnessing this sudden, blurry slaughter of the last guy who had pissed Bates off with a couple of smart-ass remarks about his mother, nobody wanted to take any chances. The whole thing made him wonder how much truth was in Bates's stories, and if so, that made him wonder exactly what the hell Metcon had done to him. "Hexon K," he would say, sometimes repeating it quietly in his lower bunk at night, either in his sleep or while lying awake in the dark. That was the name of the drug he said they were testing on him, the drug that did such terrible things to him, though he was unable to give specifics. The more he thought about it, the more unlikely it seemed that someone as empty-headed as Jack could concoct a story like that. Yeager felt sorry for him. He was what Yeager's mother used to call a mental inebriate. Whatever had caused it, though, obviously had not been Bates's own doing, and he suspected that the traumatic physical, sexual, and psychological abuse he had grown up with probably had a lot to do with it. For that reason, and because, in spite of everything he had done and was capable of doing, Bates seemed to have a big, childlike heart, Jaeger felt sorry for him. For Enzo Jaeger, that was extraordinary. Pity was something he rarely, if ever, felt. He had no time to navel-gaze, though, and shifted his thoughts to the present situation. They had been pounded by the moon's raging winds since arriving, until about 10 minutes ago when they got beyond the storm wall that protected Hadley's Hope from the endless onslaught. It made walking easier, but it did nothing to give them shelter from the drenching rain or jagged bolts of lightning that lit up the dark gray sky and sometimes struck the ground or one of the tortured stone formations that twisted up toward the sky. Jaeger had an old buddy named Lupo who had gone straight and was currently working heavy equipment in the very shake-and-bake colony that was sprawled before them now. He hoped that Lupo would help him get a ship that would take him and Jack even farther away from the Tartarus. If Lupo would not help, then they would simply take what they needed on their own. But something was wrong. As they made their way around a corner of the complex, Jaeger's skin suddenly felt tighter on his body, as if it were shrinking, an alarm signal that always sharpened his attention. He saw something to his left that bothered him before he understood why. A big Daihōtai tractor stood halfway through a bay door. In the slashing rain, the tractor's 8x8 wheel arrangement made it look like some kind of hulking mechanical monster. It was the kind of vehicle his buddy Lupo would be operating and repairing in the colony. But it was still and silent. As he and Jack fully rounded that corner, he saw that the tractor was unoccupied and the big metal bay door had slammed down on it from above. When Jaeger stopped, Bates did too and stood beside him, waiting for him to say something.
"This doesn't look good," he said. "But we've got to get in there. Hold your fire until I say. You got that, Jack?"
"Got it, Enzo. Got it."
Jaeger's muscles tensed as he neared the open bay door, and his heart throbbed in his neck. He leaned forward for one of those heartbeats, then withdrew again after getting a quick but clear look through the bay door. He saw no people or movement, and heard no sounds from inside. There was no sign of life at all. Someone would have approached them by now. Combined with the bay door being closed on the abandoned tractor, things did not look good to Jaeger.
"Why is it so empty?" Bates whispered. "Good question. Eyes and ears open now. You got it?"
"Yep."
As they passed beneath the half-closed bay door, Bates had to duck a bit to avoid bumping his head. Once inside, they slid back their helmet faceplates. Jaeger felt cold, damp air on his face as he looked around. Tractors were lined up in rows to the left, with rows of power loaders to the right, all surrounded by crates and other equipment. It seemed to Jaeger that if he wanted to find his buddy Lupo, he had come inadvertently to the most likely part of the colony. But there was no one there. Besides the perpetual storm outside the bay door, there were no sounds, no signs of activity at all. When he turned his gaze down to the floor, Jaeger's worries became fears. He saw shiny pools of dark red surrounded by dark spatterings.
"Something bad happened here, Enzo," Bates whispered.
As his eyes swept the floor of the large chamber, as much of it as he could see anyway, Jaeger saw more puddles and spatters, as well as streaks of red here and there over the floor. Blood had been shed, bodies had been removed. Things looked bleak.
"Yeah,"
Jaeger finally replied.
"Something bad."
He reached his right hand up, unsnapped the holster that stuck up over his shoulder, and removed the 12-gauge Mossberg shotgun he kept strapped to his back. He opened the collapsible shoulder stock. His left hand checked to make sure that his Glock 9mm was still at his hip, ready to be drawn. They took a few more steps into the building, with Bates following Jaeger's lead. A whirring noise made Jaeger halt and turn his head toward the sound, up and to the right. The sound came again from the left. Surveillance cameras mounted around the facility were turning toward them, watching them. A stern female voice crackled over speakers Jaeger could not locate. "Identify yourself." Jaeger turned to Bates and gave him a wink, a signal for him to remain silent until otherwise notified.
My friend and I have found ourselves stranded on this moon, and we were looking for shelter. The conditions are not hospitable."
He smiled up at the cameras.
"Identify yourself." We were on our way to..."
A confusion of voices burst from the speakers, then a male voice said,
"Enzo? Enzo fucking Jaeger?"
Jaeger grinned.
"Lupo? Is that you? What the hell are you doing here?"
He smiled and shrugged.
"It's a small galaxy. This is my friend Jack." "No, seriously, what are you doing here?" That's quite a story." "I'm sure it is."
Jaeger nodded down at the floor.
"Looks like you've had some problems here."
"Yeah. Careful, Enzo. You may be in danger at the moment. Look around. Look real good, and make sure you're alone in there."
When Jaeger looked around a second time, he noticed how many dark spaces there were between tractors and loaders, in corners, spaces in which he could see nothing but impenetrable shadows. His eyes narrowed as he looked deeper into that darkness. Was that movement? Mad had seen the dull glow of Hadley's Hope oozing above the twisted rock formations in what looked like the near distance as soon as she and Jex had exited the Viper. The walk there, on the other hand, was hampered by the worst winds she had ever encountered and a steady downpour of rain, and it seemed to take much longer than she expected.
"It doesn't look like the kind of place that has an exciting nightlife,"
Jex said after they rounded the end of the storm wall and stopped to survey what they could see of the complex.
"By the way, Jaeger and Bates beat us here. If you remember, I told you we'd have to be fast if we wanted to..."
"Fuck off, Jex." Mad frowned as she looked at the colony in front of her. "This place looks dead." She and Jex had visited a shake-and-bake colony a few years ago on the trail of a fugitive, and it had been a bustling place throughout their visit. Loud machinery and heavy equipment were in operation around the clock, and there was endless movement all through the colony as tractors arrived from, and others departed to, mines and mining or wildcatting expeditions or other destinations. All the lights that illuminated Hadley's Hope seemed to draw attention to its stillness. There was no activity anywhere she looked.
"It looks like a ghost town," she said.
"Like it's been abandoned."
"Not according to my readings," Jack said.
"They appear to have holed up inside, and they've shut this place down to do it.
That's not very Weyland-Yutani of them. Unless they're trying to avoid some kind of threat. Maybe from outside."
"Then maybe we should try to get inside." Mad started walking briskly again and Jex kept up. A few minutes later, Jex said,
"There seems to be a bay door lodged open with a Daihotai tractor up ahead."
"That doesn't sound good, but we'll take it as an invitation to come inside." Jaeger realized he was quickly starting to feel paranoid and resisted it by taking his eyes from the dark corners around him and looking again at the surveillance camera directly in front of and above him.
"Who's in here with us, Lupo?"
"We're, not entirely sure yet. And it's not so much a who as a what."
"Okay. You gonna explain any of that fucking jabber, or am I supposed to take guesses at whatever the hell you're talking about?
You've come at a bad time, Enzo. You and your friend need to turn around and get out of here while you can. Go back to your ship and get the hell out of here. We don't have enough fuel to get anywhere. Then go take shelter in your ship. I'm serious, Enzo. You need to leave the building now. You're not safe here, and we can't let you in. For all I know, you may be safer out there.
What the hell are you talking about, Lupo?
Identify yourself, the female voice said again. Jaeger frowned, squinted at the camera.
What?
Identify yourself.
It suddenly occurred to Jaeger that the woman was not talking to him, and he spun around in time to see two faceless figures just inside the bay door, raising their guns and aiming at
him. Take cover, Jack, he
said. They fired an instant before Jaeger fired his shotgun, and half a heartbeat after both of them began to dive behind the nearest tractor, with Bates half a step behind him, as both guns fired. The three shots roared and reverberated in the chamber, bouncing sharply off the walls. The shooters ran for cover in different directions, one toward the tractors, the other toward the loaders, and all those dark corners.
"Who the fuck are they, Enzo?"
Bates said, his voice high with panic.
"Who could have found us? I thought we blew up all the Tartarus' cruisers. Who's shooting at us, Enzo?"
"Be quiet. I don't know. Let me think. Let me think."
Whoever the shooters were, it was clear that they intended to kill Jaeger and Bates because they had started shooting at them on sight. Their only choice was to keep making nice with Lupo and get inside with him.
"Hey, Lupo!" Jaeger shouted. "Turns out we're kinda wanted. We could use some help here,"
Lupo's staticky voice said. "I told you, Enzo, we can't help you. We can't let you in. I'm afraid you're on your own, buddy."
"Fuck,"
Jaeger muttered, turning to look around them.
"Where'd those two go?"
Mad huddled behind a row of tractor wheels and listened to the voice over the speakers.
"Look, all of you, I don't care what your fucking gripe is with each other. Take it someplace else. You're all in danger here."
When the voice did not continue, Mad whispered, "What do you think he's talking about?"
"There's something else in here with us," Jax replied in her earpiece.
"Who?"
Instead of responding, Jax began shooting. There was an explosion of gunfire from the rows of loaders where Jax had hidden. When Mad looked in the direction of the sounds, she saw a large shape moving in the shadows among the loaders. Something significantly larger than Jax.
"Jax, what's happening?"
"We may have to leave empty-handed," Jax said. "I recommend getting the hell out of here now."
He began shooting again. Mad hurried across the open space toward Jax. Jaeger was watching one of the two shooters run away from the tractors in the direction of all the sudden gunfire among the loaders across the way, when Bates's whimpering wormed into his ears.
"What's the matter now?"
Jaeger whispered, turning toward him. He found Bates facing in the opposite direction and looking up. As Jaeger spun around, Bates began screaming. He looked up and saw the creature emerging from the murky shadows between two tractors. The first thing he saw was the mouth, mostly the glistening, dripping fangs. Bates continued to scream as he backed away, loud, piercing screams that still, somehow, retained within them that frightened child whimper. Jaeger tried to make sense of the creature as it oozed out of the darkness and rose up, those nightmare fangs slowly parting as the mouth opened, its body black with slender arms, large hands that looked more like claws, long, muscular legs, and a tail that curled upward behind it. Something happened to Bates's scream. The whimper vanished, and the sound thickened. Jaeger wanted to turn and see what was wrong, but he could not take his eyes from the thing slowly closing in on him. He could not move, in fact, and felt as if every inch of his body had turned to icy, rigid steel. The scream, which had become a guttural growl, stopped. But inside his helmet, he still heard Bates's breathing, heavy and punctuated with grunts of effort. Jaeger heard a sound above him. He wanted to look up because it sounded like it had come from the roof of the tractor on his left, but he could not look away from what he was certain would be his death. Somehow, he broke through his paralysis and raised the shotgun. The creature rushed to close the distance between it and Jaeger as he curled his finger around the trigger of his shotgun. A wet, throaty roar sounded as something seemed to drop on the alien from above, making it shriek as it spun around, thrashing its tail and trying to throw off the intruder. It was Bates. As he lowered his gun and took a few steps back, forgotten now by the monster that had been advancing on him only seconds earlier, Jaeger realized that Bates had climbed on top of one of the tractors and dove onto the creature. But the thing that was now riding that black, spidery monster, roaring as it repeatedly pounded the long, cylindrical head of the shrieking thing, was no longer the Bates he knew. He had shed his suit because he had become too big for it, and his exposed skin, a rusty red, as if all of his many prominent freckles had blended together and darkened, was rough and creased, like the thick hide of an elephant, and now sprouted bony thorns all over his body. His arms were the same size that his legs used to be, and appeared to be longer, ending in enormous hands with a thorn on each knuckle and deadly black claws that had emerged from the tips of his fingers. Jaeger's big, dumb, lumbering friend had become a hulking, thorny, fast-moving devil from some mythological pit. The creature had completely forgotten about Jaeger, who now stood in slack-jawed horror and watched the two monsters fight. Mad saw Jex lying flat on his back on the floor, a gun in each hand, pushing himself rapidly backward over the floor with his feet as he fired up at the advancing creature, a black, spidery scorpion nightmare. Behind her, she heard a terrific roar from the rows of tractors and a shriek like metal claws dragging over a gigantic, amplified chalkboard. But she barely registered the sounds as her right hand drew the sawed-off shotgun and her left reached for the Glock, then stopped uncertainly. Instead, she slipped the shotgun back into its pocket and snapped one of the grenades off of her belt. Her thumb popped the tab, and she threw it directly at the creature, then dropped flat on the floor and covered her head with her arms. The explosion sent a shockwave through her bones, and the thing that had been about to attack Jex released a full and ear-shredding screech, what Mad had always imagined hell would sound like if it were a real place. She jumped to her feet and raced through the thin, stinging smoke left by the grenade toward Jex, who had taken advantage of the monster's momentary distraction to roll over, push himself up, and try to stand. But the alien was not distracted long enough. Mad felt as if she were in a dream in which everything, including her own body, moved in agonizingly slow motion as she tried to run to Jex. The creature behind him lunged forward, moving slowly through the air as it reached out one of those long-fingered claw hands and clutched Jex's right ankle. Reaching for another grenade, she watched helplessly as the creature dragged Jex backward by the ankle, toward the shadows. Mad heard the savage growl again, but this time it came from above her. Something large dropped from the top of one of the loaders and onto the back of the creature, which reared up, dragging Jex with it. The alien lifted him into the air and swung him around by the leg to swat its attacker. Instead, the creature slammed Jex into the side of a loader with a leaden sound. Jex suddenly dropped to the floor in a splattering shower of white fluids. His right leg was gone. Raising her eyes to the creature, she saw Jex's leg still clutched in its claw as it fought with the mammoth red beast that kept slamming his horned fist into the side of its head. The creature had a pronounced, gorilla-like face with what appeared to be tusks, a head of wild, bushy red hair, and eyes that glistened in the dark shadow cast by the pronounced brow. The leg could be replaced. She reached down, grabbed Jex's arm, and dragged him away from the roaring and screeching. As they entered the clear passageway between the stored tractors and loaders, she saw Enzo Jaeger staggering out from between two tractors, his shotgun at his side, head down. He had not seen her yet. She clutched the Glock, drew it. He lifted his head, then began to raise the shotgun. Mad fired, and Jaeger's right kneecap exploded beneath the pant leg of his olive-green suit. He screamed all the way to the floor, and as his back hit the concrete, the 12-gauge spun in circles as it skittered away from his hand. The hellish sounds continued to reverberate off the walls from the cluster of loaders. Mad looked down and said, "Don't go anywhere, Jex." "Oh, all right, but I won't wait forever." As she stalked toward Jaeger, he reached for a holstered gun. She kicked his hand and the gun slid away from him. "Enzo Jaeger, I presume?" she said, lifting her faceplate so he could see he had been brought down by a woman. She always enjoyed the hell out of that part. He stared up at her with pain pulling the features of his face backward on each side, making sounds that vacillated between whimpers and grunts. Nearly squinting shut, his eyes studied her through his pain.
You're...
She smiled. "Madison Voss."
Mad.
Lifting her eyebrows cheerily, she nodded. "You've heard of me." He gave her a pain-twisting smile, nodding.
"Yeah, I've heard about you. Here to take me in, huh?"
"That's right. You and your buddy. Where is he, by the way?"
"Well, I think he just saved your ass."
Mad thought of the beefy, towering beast that had intervened in time to save Jex. Skin thick, heavy, red, and horned. That was Jack Bates. She remembered his claim that he had been experimented on by Metcon. "I don't have time to fuck around," she said, looking down at Jaeger again, still holding her gun on him. She opened her mouth to say more, but realized abruptly that the roaring and shrieking had stopped. Turning to the loaders again, she took in a surprised breath when she saw a naked man emerge from the shadows, bleeding at his neck, shoulder, belly, and thigh. He staggered into the opening.
"Enzo?"
he croaked.
Jaeger
propped himself up on an elbow.
"Jack, you're okay."
Hunched over weakly, limping, Bates said again,
"Enzo, is that you?"
"Yeah, it's me, Jack. I'm here. Over here, on the floor."
"Jack Bates?" Mad said. Bates turned to her slowly, frowned.
"Who's she?"
She smirked and said, "So, this is the one who ate his mother, huh?" Jaeger grunted as he struggled to sit up.
"Don't pay any attention to her, Jack. You hear me? Ignore her."
"My mother?"
Bates said, standing in place now, staring at her.
"You talking about my mother?"
She drew the Smith & Wesson and aimed it at him. "Over here, Mama's boy."
Mama's...
"I said ignore her, Jack."
He turned to Mad and said,
Will you shut the fuck up, bitch?
To Bates again, he said,
Listen, Jack, she's nobody. Just fucking ignore her. Listen to me, Jack. You listening to me?
Bates began to sway where he stood, back and forth, and he groaned a long, sustained sound that lasted until he screamed.
Oh, shit! Yeager shouted. You dumb fuck!
He looked around for his shotgun, then crawled toward it frantically. Bates started toward her, limping at first, looking weak and wounded, but with each step his speed increased, along with his size and height, impossibly fast, so fast that she could not process it. His skin became gnarled and darkened to a rusty color, and small thorns popped out of it like spring buds on wildflowers in a children's cartoon. His face reshaped itself into one resembling a gorilla's, and tusks grew upward from his lower lip. And she watched in frozen awe, stunned into paralysis for a moment, as the monster Bates had become lumbered toward her. He reached a colossal hand toward her as he approached, and it grew bigger and bigger, filling her field of vision. She fired the gun. He stopped and flinched, making a low, gurgling sound. It lasted no more than 2 seconds. Then he was moving toward her again.
Jack!
Yeager shouted. The thorny monster that, a moment ago, had been Jack Bates stopped and turned toward Yeager, first its head, then its body. A blast of the shotgun took off much of Bates's large, malformed face and knocked him backward. He hit the floor with a heavy, resounding smack. Mad quickly turned to Yeager and aimed the gun.
Drop the shotgun, Enzo, she said.
He did not.
You've got to take me with you, he said, his voice low and gravelly, moist with emotion. I've got to get off this fucking moon, you understand? He was my friend. Jack was my only friend. You understand me? I killed him to save you. You were dead, you hear me? Dead. He was going to end you because of what you said. I've seen him do it before, but I stopped him. That's got to mean something. God damn it, something.
You're wanted dead or alive, Enzo, and I never intended to take you back. She fired the gun, and a hole appeared above his right eye a fraction of a second before he flopped back on the floor. Mad headed for the bay door, still lodged open by the abandoned tractor. Jex was strapped to her back, surprisingly light, and his leg, held in her hand by the ankle, flopped limply as she walked.
You got the fingers? Jex said.
Please, you think I'm new at this? She had cut a finger from each fugitive. Back at the Tartarus, the fingers would be tested for prints and DNA, and matched with the escaped prisoners so she could be paid her remaining 5 million bounty.
We can go on vacation after this job, she said. You could use one. I don't need one.
As she neared the door, a blurt of static came from the speakers, and a female voice shouted,
You, whoever you are, send help! We need help!
Mad heard screaming in the background. Then the woman who had spoken screamed. Voices in the background screamed,
Let us out! Open the door! We have to get out!
Not our problem, Mad said. She began running. We've got to get the fuck out of here. She lowered her faceplate as she passed through the bay door and into the cold storm outside. The rain became a sharp, machine gun assault on her helmet. Jagged tendrils of lightning jittered across the dark sky in all directions.
I can't believe this shit, she said, running through the downpour.
I'm running through this storm with you strapped to my back and your leg flapping around in my hand like an old fishing pole.
Oh, admit it. You've been wanting to get a piece of me for 4 years.
She chuckled and said, "Fuck off, Jax."
0 to Hero by Weston Oaksey. Lambda Serpentis LV666, 9 July 2182. Corporal Franklin Sykes had everything he'd ever wanted. There was no place farther from the core systems than the tiny moon LV666 in the Lambda Serpentis system above the water planet Lambda Serpentis 2. Nothing ever happened other than an oxygen scooper sinking every now or then on the planet below, or a particularly virulent form of herpes spreading among the Weyland-Yutani molybdenum miners, which was exactly the reason he'd orchestrated his move here ever since word started spreading about some sort of alien monster that shit acid and ate metal. Whether or not it was a rumor, he'd spent a silver bullet he'd earned when he'd looked the other way when he caught a Weyland-Yutani administrator doing the dirty to an underage girl in the back of his office. The corporate hack was more than happy to get Sykes out of there, and the young colonial marine soon found himself in stasis and on his way to the emptiest corner of the known universe. A corner safe from the sort of aliens everyone had started talking about in low whispers at the ends of long, boring days. When Sykes had arrived on LV-666, he'd found the station even more to his liking. The mine was almost played out, and rumors were that Weyland-Yutani might be pulling out. Their leaving was of little concern to the small colonial marine contingent. The marines would stay, no matter what happened. Lonely guards on the edge of nothing. When he wasn't working, Sykes immersed himself into Charity Rock, the intergalactic trading game that was all the rage. He was an Iberian-level trader, with palaces in 7 systems, a fleet of merchant ships, and his own private navy. He was trying to take an 8th system, but a handful of lesser traders had formed a consortium to edge him out. His life was near on perfect. Whenever Sykes wasn't playing, he was breaking up bar fights or monitoring the ever-silent emergency broadcast system from the mines, along with the rest of his 18-person colonial marine platoon, whose boredom had reached truly majestic levels. So it came as a complete and utter shock to him when at 0553 hours on Tuesday, the emergency broadcast system lit up like an old Earth Christmas tree with the following report. SOS for immediate release, Alcon, Weyland-Yutani Mining Concern LV-666 requires immediate evacuation of tunnels 10 through 14, 3 KIA, and 7 WIA, SOS. Sykes stared at the screen as it rebroadcast the SOS, his eyes wide and unbelieving. His thoughts went immediately to the impossible. How could this happen? He'd manipulated the system like a genius, ensuring he was as far away from those monsters as possible. Now the very things he'd been afraid of were in his backyard, and he was about to be asked to lead a team to eradicate them. He breathed deeply, reminding himself that he was so far away from the center of things that it would be impossible for the monsters to be here. It was probably something else, like a cave-in or loss of oxygen. Nowhere in the message had it mentioned anything like he feared. Still, he reread the emergency missive that detailed dead and wounded miners. Something had to have happened, and it could very well be those... He stopped himself. He needed to be in control. He needed his wits about him. He breathed deeply again, this time through his nose. He needed to remain calm. The last thing he needed was to hyperventilate. After a few breaths, he looked at the facts. There was no denying that there was a problem. What the problem was, he'd need to ascertain before he'd allow himself to panic. He reminded himself that the SOS wasn't his only problem. He also had some serious Charity Rock gameplay he needed to perform to stop the others from getting through a back door he'd intentionally left open. They knew about it. He knew they knew about it, but they didn't know that he knew that they knew. The trap had been set, and all he had to do was spring it. But he had to be online to do it. And now, there were dead and wounded miners to take care of. He felt his insides wrench. It was all just too much. He wanted to puke. He bent forward and hugged his legs, hoping, praying that the signal was an accident. Maybe if he ignored it, it would go away.